Unemployment is high, race riots are occurring, a deadly flu epidemic is raging out of control in our cities. Social disorder seems to be spreading throughout all our institutions. The President of the United States, Woodrow Wilson, lies helpless after being felled by a stroke, and no one seems to be in charge of the country. It is in this context that Samuel Eliot, and I'll introduce the cast in a moment, President of the American Unitarian Association and his secretary, Lewis Cornish, receive a series of visitors at their headquarters on a blustery December day in Boston. The cast, our cast for today is first A. Mitchell Palmer, United States Attorney General, played by Glenn Jacob. Samuel Atkins Elliott, President, American Unitarian Association, played by Bob Meyerson. Lewis Craig Cornish, Secretary, American Unitarian Association, played by Stuart Fink. Jane Addams, social reformer, advocate for justice for immigrants, played by Mary Lasick. And Emma Goldman, anarchist, labor activist, and women's rights advocate, played by Joe Murdoch. And I will be the narrator for our play today. Well, the first person to visit Mr. Elliott this morning is A. Mitchell Palmer, the Attorney General of the United States.
Welcome, Mr. Attorney General. I was unaware you were coming, so excuse the informality. Let me introduce the Secretary of our Association, Mr. Lewis Cornish. Now, please tell us the reason for your unexpected visit.
Thanks to you both for seeing me this morning on such short notice. I come to speak with you in a time of great national peril.
Sounds serious.
It is, Mr. Cornish, extremely serious.
Please proceed, sir.
Gentlemen, I am sure you are both aware of the uncertainty and turmoil that is gripping our nation today. I know you both keep in close touch with your membership and member churches and have observed these conditions at close hand.
Of course, and we as a denomination are quite concerned about this.
And you have every right to be, gentlemen. This is the very reason for my visit here today. We at the Department of Justice know what is going on in our country, and we know why it is going on, and we need your help to combat the evils that plague, to threaten, to destroy our way of life. That is the purpose of my visit today, to urge you and your churches will join us in our great cause to defeat these terrible evils.
With all due respect, sir, could you be a bit more specific? What cause and what evils, for instance?
Surely you are aware, gentlemen, of the dangers that we all face at present. Don't you recall the mail bombings in April this year? Many government officials received these booby-trapped packages. And don't forget that even more destructive bombing campaign last June. Even Boston was not spared, and nor was I. My own home in Washington, D.C. was bombed. And that explosion just missed the home of Franklin Roosevelt, our assistant secretary of the Navy, who lives right across the street from me.
We all know about these terrible incidents, Mr. Palmer, but weren't they the work of just a few deluded fanatics? Haven't arrests already been made?
That is precisely what I need to discuss with you, gentlemen. Those arrests are just the beginning. We have now discovered that a much wider and far more dangerous conspiracy exists. A conspiracy that will not only target individuals, but also seek to overthrow the very foundations of our government and destroy our democracy.
My goodness. That really is alarming. But what evidence have you discovered to support these concerns?
Why, a great deal of evidence, Mr. Elliott. Our intelligence shows conclusively that those June bombings that struck in 7 major cities across the country were carefully designed and timed to go off within minutes of each other by a single organization that has infiltrated our society with the sole purpose of opposing all authority and eventually overthrowing our government. This organization is composed of Italian anarchists led by Luigi Galliani. His many followers are known as Gallianists, and they are particularly successful in radicalizing young working people who are dissatisfied with their pay and working conditions.
Sounds like you have done a thorough investigation, Mr. Palmer.
Oh, yes, we have indeed. And I have to thank my energetic young associate, Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, for the excellent work he has done in coordinating and directing our efforts. I have now placed him at the head of our newly formed General Intelligence Division in order to keep track of all the radical activity in our country.
Well, all this is interesting and alarming information, Mr. Attorney General, but I fail to see how it directly involves our denomination.
Yes, we certainly admire your important efforts to keep our country safe, but don't see how we could assist you in any way. We are primarily a religious organization, as you know.
But, gentlemen, I can plainly see how unschooled you are in the nefarious ways of radicalism. Its doctrines are seeping into our schools, our colleges, churches, our homes, institutions, militaries, and business. It proclaims the equality of all, the freedom of women, the openness of marriage, the liberty of all prisoners, the destruction of all authority except for the authority of conscience, and the sharing of all economic goods after the abolition of private property. These corrosive doctrines are spreading even now throughout our nation and must be stopped at once before they ruin us as a nation.
Are you suggesting, sir, that our church is somehow involved in all this radicalism that you say is sweeping the country?
Mr. Elliott, your church cannot help but be involved, since many of your members are self-proclaimed radicals. We are tracking their activities at this very moment.
What? You are spying on some of our church members? How dare you, sir?
We do not call it spying, Mr. Cornish. Let's just say we are observing their movements and activities closely for a time.
And what will you do if you determine someone seems suspicious?
Why, we would seek to imprison or deport them as quickly as possible so that we could keep their contagion from being spread any further.
Whoosh! Just like that, without such niceties as trials or legal representation?
We live in a desperate world, Mr. Cornish. Time is short, and we must act quickly.
Mr. Elliott, I would urge you to have no part in these draconian schemes.
Mr. Cornish, please calm yourself. If the safety of our country is at stake, as Mr. Palmer seems to believe, we may have to make some adjustments here and there. What is it that you wish us to do, Mr. Palmer?
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. You should know that under the authority of the recently passed Espionage Act, which is now approved by the Supreme Court, Mr. Hoover has sent our agents to all major cities across the nation, and they have, at this point, made 6,000 arrests of people suspected of radical and subversive activities. Now, we are particularly interested to know If you have any knowledge of such individuals in your denomination or in the general Boston area, if so, we need to act quickly and decisively to detain them in order to protect our democracy.
You are indeed casting a wide net, sir. Too wide, it seems to me. And you wish us to name names? Is that it?
Of course. How else will we find these people?
Mr. Palmer, really, we are not a group of informers. We are a church.
I can see that I am making you upset. I'm sorry that these important matters offend you, but it is vital that you realize the gravity of our situation. Now, I don't mean to rush off, but I really must go. I think you need time to reflect on my request so that I will not take your initial refusal at face value. I will return later today to hear your final decision, but remember, our time is short, so don't delay.
I want to have nothing more to do with this man, sir, or with his network of spies. Surely you will not consider engaging in any kind of cooperation with him or with this government on this issue.
Before I settle on a response to Mr. Palmer, I want to hear from the other side of this argument. I have invited Mrs. Emma Goldman and her friend, Miss Jane Adams, to come in this afternoon and tell us their version of the events that Mr. Palmer so vividly describes. After we hear what they have to say, I think we'll be able to make a more fair and equitable decision.
Later that day in the early afternoon, Elliot and Cornish are visited by Emma Goldman and Jane Adams, her friend. Goldman is a famous anarchist born in Russia, but who immigrated to the U.S. when she was 20 years old. Since her arrival, she has traveled extensively both in the U.S. and abroad, lecturing on the values of anarchism, industrial reorganization, union issues, and women's emancipation. She is feared and loathed by the business establishment and the conservative press, especially for her support of activists who use violent means such as assassination to achieve social change. Adams is a well-known social reformer who has spent many years of her life working with and living among poor immigrants while providing programs to assist them with employment and gaining citizenship. Adams is hoping Goldman will be able to plead her case in court to stop her pending deportation as a criminal alien. Congress has recently empowered Attorney General Palmer and the Department of Justice to deport any alien who is identified as an anarchist.
Welcome to you, Mrs. Goldman and Miss Adams. So good to see you again. I think we all know each other. No need for introductions, I think.
Thank you. It has been a while.
Yes, it has. I believe I last saw you about 10 years ago in Carnegie Hall, where you debated someone on the subject of socialism versus anarchism.
Yes, I was there too. Huge crowd, very stirring. But I believe we should get to the point of our meeting this afternoon, Mr. Elliott and Mr. Cornish. I requested this meeting with you on behalf of my friend Emma, who is now being targeted for deportation by the U.S. Attorney General because of her strong stance on social issues and devotion to the cause of anarchism.
Certainly, I am very familiar with your situation, Mrs. Goldman, as is Mr. Cornish. It is definitely a serious violation of your civil liberties. How can we assist you?
At this point, my situation is very precarious. I have just been released from prison, where I was illegally confined for my views, my activities on behalf of working people, my speeches and writing on behalf of social justice, union organizing, and women's emancipation, as well as my friendship with numerous comrades, many of whom are also now imprisoned for similar views and activities. I have never been convicted of any crime, but have nevertheless been in jail and imprisoned constantly simply because I speak out on matters closest to my heart, while others prefer the safety of silence or collaboration. As of this moment, I am free. But I understand there's an effort underway to rearrest me at any time so I can be deported as soon as possible, along with many of my colleagues and comrades.
Well said, Emma. I believe you state your case well.
And I believe I can speak for all in our religious association who voice great sorrow over the treatment you have received at the hands of our government. Isn't that true, Mr. Elliott?
Indeed, Mr. Cornish, I completely agree, but I do have one concern, Mrs. Goldman. It's probably a misunderstanding on my part, but it is an issue that has been raised by some of our church members in the past when we have expressed an interest in supporting you in print or financially.
Ah. What is your concern, Mr. Elliott?
Well, it has been rumored for many years that you once expressed great support and sympathy for the anarchist who assassinated our late president, William McKinley. It is said you felt then that he was not a madman or a vicious killer, but was indeed a brave young man devoted to the welfare of our country. Apparently, you claim the assassin viewed the president as a willing tool of the capitalist classes, who was crushing the working people of this country and denying them their rightful share in the basic necessities of life. Does this depiction accurately describe your views?
Yes, it does. I did then and still do feel great respect for our president's assassin. I know this is a sentiment with which few agree and which many people strongly reject. But you see, the assassin became for me a symbol of all that was right about our efforts to change our system of government. He stood up for his beliefs. He took leadership and showed courage. And in the end, died for the cause to which he was committed.
Mrs. Goldman, I had forgotten about your concern for the president's killer. Surely you must realize that many members of our church might object to the idea that noble ends should be pursued by using violent means.
I think what Emma means is that most people condemn the assassin but idolize the victim, while it is often the assassin who has the higher ideals and the most to lose, and is often moved to act by great personal distress and tragedy.
I understand, Miss Adams, but still, one cannot say that striving to realize great ideals justifies such horrific means.
Mr. Cornish, I am not personally a killer. However, I feel deeply that some individuals may be justified in taking a life if that other person is a threat to the common good. Your government used the same rationale when it executed the individual who killed President Lincoln and those who plotted the assassination, and has since used it again and again to kill those whom they call enemies of the state.
I think these arguments are interesting, Mr. Elliott, but we have little time left, so let me explain our purpose today. Emma and I have come to ask your intervention, and that of your church on her behalf, if we are able to get our day in court to prevent her upcoming deportation.
I'm not sure how we could possibly do that, Ms. Goldman.
But you've just said that you sympathize to my cause, Mr. Elliott. There are, for I think you can use your influence and that of your associates to help bring about a satisfactory result in my case. I desperately need your assistance.
There may be some difficulties here, Mrs. Goldman. I believe this question would first require a recommendation by our board. That might take a few weeks.
And by that time, you won't have to worry, gentlemen. Mrs. Goldman will be long gone.
Mr. Attorney General, we didn't expect you back so soon.
I'm sorry for bursting in on all of you this way, Mr. Elliott, but I need to see you one last time about your answer to the question I posed to you this morning. However, seeing Mrs. Goldman here with you, along with her erstwhile friend, Miss Adams, leads me to believe that you are not going to approve the request I mentioned to you earlier today. Am I correct in that assumption?
Mr. Elliott is trying to decide which course of action would be best for us.
Hold on. Wait a moment, Cornish. We don't need to dilly-dally here. Mr. Palmer, if you mean your request that we supply you with names of individuals in our church or among our friends that you might wish to deport or imprison in your crusade against Reds, or all whom you consider to be disloyal or dangerous to our country, then no, Mr. Palmer, we will not participate in any way in your program to purify our country of dissidents, protesters, nonconformists, or anyone who wishes to challenge legal authority. We and our church insist that all such individuals be protected and encouraged to thrive. Above all, the rights of the individual conscience are sacred to our church and all its members. And with that in mind, I would also point out that we will do all we can in our power to see that Mrs. Goldman's rights as a citizen of our country are protected.
A fine speech, sir. But I'm afraid that Mrs. Goldman's rights as a citizen are a moot point at this time. We stripped her of her U.S. citizenship 3 days ago. She and a few hundred of her fellow radicals are scheduled for deportation next week. And don't try to run, Mrs. Goldman, or you and your friends will be instantly arrested and imprisoned again.
We will fight you to the bitter end, sir. You've not seen the last of us.
Brave words, madam, but they will not get you or your cause very far at this point. Well, I must take my final leave of all of you now. Mr. Elliott and Mr. Cornish, I am sorry that you and your denomination will not join us in our efforts to provide our country's citizens with safety and security by rooting out threats to their way of life. But I warn you, my associate, Mr. Hoover, tells me that based on intelligence he has gathered, the next major anarchist attack on our country will occur on May 1st, 1920, or May Day, as the Reds call it. When that occurs, there will be severe loss of innocent life because of even more powerful bombs used by your precious dissidents. Then we will see how you feel about your devotion to the sacred right of conscience, as you call it, since you obviously value individual conscience more than public safety. I believe you and your church will have much to answer for. Goodbye.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott and Mr. Cornish, for standing up for Emma in the way you did. That showed great courage.
Yes, I agree. We must also go now. We have much to do in order to fight these pending deportations. Goodbye, sirs. You will be hearing from us, and thank you.
Well, sir, you will need to discuss your decision to support Mrs. Goldman with the board immediately. All the newspapers will have heard of your statements by tomorrow morning. As you know, some of our members consider her to be a dangerous radical, a kind of wild woman who needs to be controlled, that type of thing.
I'm aware of the difficulties, Mr. Cornish. I simply could not stand that Palmer fellow for another instant, and probably I lost my head. But I think we can make it work somehow. I know our church does prize those who fight for social justice.
Yes, but sometimes one person's social justice is another person's social injustice, or even chaos, especially when it involves killing, bombs, and the loss of innocent lives, the types of things Mrs. Goldman has been involved in other words.
I'm aware it can be a fine line at times, but isn't that what our faith is all about?
And what is that, sir?
It's those lines, those fine lines, Cornish, the ones that really count.
And so our play ends. But what became of the individuals we portrayed? Attorney General Palmer, a Democrat, slowly faded from public attention after he left office in 1921 when the Republicans regained control of the presidency. The great May Day revolution he predicted never materialized, and his fame as a foe of radicalism steadily declined. But many of the policies he helped to develop, especially the Espionage Act, remain in place today and are still used to justify the deportation of individuals who are called undesirable aliens. Samuel Eliot continued his well-regarded career as president of the American Unitarian Association until 1927, when he was succeeded by Lewis Cornish, who served with distinction until 1937. Both Jane Addams and Emma Goldman grew in stature following the events we have described and have now become feminist icons. Addams is now recognized as one of the greatest humanitarians of the 20th century, while Goldman, now forgiven for her anarchist indiscretions, has emerged as a champion of women's rights and gained fame as a prominent opponent of militarism and nationalism. So the play continues even to today, though the players have changed. Hopefully, we have shed a bit of light on the play itself this morning. Thank you for coming today.